Hello and welcome to Pod Rights, a series of podcasts from the Australian Human Rights Commission. I'm Graham Innes, the Disability Discrimination Commissioner. I'm a little sad recording this Pod Rights because I'm speaking with the immediate past president of the Australian Human Rights Commission, Catherine Branson QC, about one of her final tasks at the Commission. I don't plan to introduce you to this episode, Cathy, because you're well known to our Pod Rights audience. Cathy has been an excellent president of the Commission, and we've all valued her fearless and collegiate leadership. And it's an example of that leadership which we're going to discuss today on Pod Rights. In the last 8 months, Cathy led an inquiry into the treatment of individuals suspected of people smuggling offences who said that they were children. Most of these people were Indonesian nationals who'd worked as crew on boats bringing asylum seekers to Australia and who were subsequently investigated for people smuggling offences. Cathy and the human rights team at the Commission became increasingly concerned that errors in age assessment procedures may have resulted in some children spending long periods of time detained in adult correctional facilities. So, in November 2011, the Commission launched an inquiry about all cases where age had been in dispute since September 2008. In this Pod Rights, we'll hear about that inquiry and its results. So, welcome again, Cathy, to Pod Rights.
Thank you, Graham.
First, this report looks back at cases from 2008. When did you start to become concerned that there was a problem with age assessment in these cases?
Graham, we became concerned that there might be problems with age assessment in late 2010. Mm-hmm. In September 2010, I visited Darwin with some staff of the Commission. We were there to look at immigration detention facilities. We found then 151 adult crew in the Northern Immigration Detention Centre and 15 boys in a special facility there for younger detainees called Berrima House. We were troubled then principally by the length of time that people were being detained without charge. But in November 2010, newspaper articles started to suggest that there might have been juveniles being held in Western Australian adult jails, and adult jails. We began looking into that, and we just became increasingly concerned about the procedures being used to assess age.
It's a big commitment, resource-wise and time-wise, isn't it, to hold an inquiry of this nature? Why did you decide to go down that path with this particular issue?
Well, the answer to that, Graham, is quite complex. First, we didn't rush into it. I first wrote to the attorney in February of 2011 raising this issue. By June, I was asking him to conduct or cause to be conducted an individual review of all cases where an individual had said that he was a juvenile, but he'd been either convicted as an adult or was being held to be placed on trial as an adult. Eventually, on the 21st of November, as you know, of that year, 2011, I announced the inquiry because I hadn't received the Attorney General's agreement to conduct an inquiry. We didn't do this lightly, as you say. It's expensive both in human resources and in money to conduct an inquiry, although we were able to hold the financial cost of this inquiry down a lot. But I think it is a primary responsibility of the Commission to seek to protect the most vulnerable in our society. Children are always vulnerable, so the rights of children are always a serious concern to the Commission. But this was a group of young people who may have been juveniles, vulnerable particularly, they were outside the country of their nationality, they didn't have guardians in Australia, and the suggested breaches of their rights were very substantial.
And how did the inquiry unfold once you decided to conduct it? Could you tell us about a bit about the sorts of investigation that you had to undertake and give us some sense of some of the most disturbing or surprising things that your inquiry uncovered?
Well, I think the procedure that we followed was a fairly traditional one. Mm. After the terms of reference were developed, we asked the government agencies involved, Department of Immigration, Attorney General's Department, the Commonwealth Director of Public Prosecutions and the Australian Federal Police, to give us the documentation that they had relevant to this group of young Indonesians, and also to provide us with some information. We made a public appeal for submissions, and we did receive submissions from, for example, people who had provided legal representation to this young cohort of individuals, also to the state children's commissioners and guardians, from some public officials, from non-government organisations, from a wide range of bodies who knew something about this topic. And we also obtained submissions from medical experts, and we were particularly anxious to have the assistance of medical experts both within and outside Australia, because much of what we were concerned about turned on the issue of using wrist x-rays as a means of assessing age.
Mm. Can you tell us a bit more about that, Kathy? Because there has been strong reliance on that, but you would appear to have found that it's just not a technique which is viable in these sorts of circumstances.
That's right, Graham. It's not that wrist x-rays can't tell you something about a young person's age, but the only purpose for which they were being used here was to determine whether a young person was older or younger than the age of 18 years. Mm. Now, at that threshold, that age of 18, what we have learnt from the experts is that wrist x-rays were not helpful. Our initial concerns were around whether sufficient appreciation was being given to potential margins for error. You know, individual young people mature at differing rates. Mm. We all know that from the people that we know and watch grow up. Mm. And related to that, we were concerned about the way statistics were being used as evidence of age. Statistics, of course, talk to populations. They don't talk to individuals. But what we became firmly persuaded of by the time that we had completed a public hearing with medical experts was that wrist x-rays are not helpful to determine whether someone is over the age of 18. To briefly explain, what was being done was that a wrist x-ray of an individual was being looked at, and if that wrist x-ray showed skeletal maturity, showed that the wrist was a mature wrist, then a judgment was being made that the person was probably an adult. Now, that, of course, could only be right if, on average, young men get a mature wrist at an age older than 18. Mm. What we learnt was that young men probably get a mature wrist either just before, on average, just before the age of 18 or at about the age of 18. So that to have a mature x-ray doesn't actually tell you whether or not they're under or over the age of 18, because that's about the age you would expect on average a young male person to get a mature wrist x-ray.
And were wrist x-rays used because most of these people were coming from a country where birth certificates and other identity records are either not kept or not easily available?
That's right, Graham. I think everybody now accepts, although it may not always have been fully appreciated, that the majority of young people in Southeast Asia, including in Indonesia, don't have their births registered in the way that happens here in Australia. And indeed, many of them, particularly in the remoter villages, which is where many of these young people come from, don't even use our form of calendar.
Right. And
precise age is just not critical to them in the way it is to us. So very many of them very likely don't know precisely how old they are in our terms.
Now, Kathy, I've jumped into the middle of a 400-page plus report because you mentioned wrist x-rays at the end of your answer to a previous question. But this report's now been tabled in federal parliament. Apart apart from the explanation of wrist x-rays which you've given us, what were your main findings in the report?
The main findings of the report are that Australia did not respect the human rights of this group of young people who claimed to be children. We assessed that by paying particular attention to the conventions on the rights of the child, a very fundamental element of that convention is if there is a doubt as to somebody's age, they must be treated as a child. That is, if you can't tell whether they're an adult or a child, to ensure their rights are protected, you must treat them as a child. So we're satisfied that that did not happen. Mm. We were, of course, not in any better position than many others to work out precisely how old each of these young persons was, but what we could say was that they, having said that they were juveniles, there was a real doubt about whether the findings that they were adult were accurate. Now, as a result of that, many of them were held in adult facilities while there was a doubt about whether they were adults. They should therefore have been treated as though they were juveniles.
Yeah.
They were placed on trial for offences on which they would not have been placed on trial if they'd been accepted to be children. They were, if convicted, sentenced to mandatory terms of imprisonment that the Australian Parliament had said were to be imposed on adults only. Their best interests were not treated as the primary consideration. We were critical of their not being provided with a guardian to protect their interests while in Australia, which would be another obligation under the Convention on the Rights of the Child. So what we found were numerous breaches by Australia of its obligations under the Convention on the Rights of the Child.
Cathy, when I have conducted inquiries, I particularly recall the same-sex, same-entitlements inquiry that I conducted in conjunction with the previous president, John von Dusser. There were particular stories that had a significant impact on me and continue to. Was that your experience from this inquiry?
Graham, it was. We spoke to a number of young Indonesians who had claimed to be underage, and we recorded the stories that they told us. Many of them were sad stories. When you think that these young individuals had been before our criminal courts, you couldn't help but reflect on the limited degree of moral culpability for their conduct.
Mm.
They often came from single-parent families. They only had limited education because of the need for them to get out and earn some income for their families.
Yes.
Nearly all of them engaged in fishing activities. Now, we learned incidentally from one of our submissions from someone who's very informed in this area that one of the reasons that these villages are often impoverished is that Australia's claim to an exclusive fishing zone, a quite expansive exclusive fishing zone, has limited their opportunities to catch fish in a way that would be financially rewarding. And we learned that many of them had been offered extremely tempting sums of money if they agreed to go on a boat, often not knowing what the purpose of the journey was, often not learning that they are on their way to Australia until they're already out at sea, and then, of course, quite unable to return. Many of them, of course, were tricked and didn't actually get the sums of money in any event because they would be paid on their return and they were detained in Australia, as those who organised the journeys probably knew they would be.
You've been quite critical of some federal government agencies, the Office of the Commonwealth Director of Public Prosecutions, the Australian Federal Police and the Attorney General's Department in particular. What sorts of responses did you receive from government in regard to these issues and the findings that you made?
Graham, I think it's important that I say first that we had a high level of cooperation from all of these agencies.
Mm-hmm.
They gave us the information that we sought. If they discovered later that some information hadn't come to us, they were quick to make sure it got to us. They all voluntarily attended a two-day public inquiry that we held in Canberra, where they were questioned over a two-day period.
Mm.
I know that hindsight enables you to see lots of things clearly that are not so easily seen as you're going through a difficult period of time, particularly where you have limited resources and making age inquiries in Indonesia is very difficult.
Yes.
But we were critical. I don't think our criticisms are all accepted, but nonetheless we've maintained a civil relationship with those who've been the subject of our inquiry and the subject of our criticisms.
Mm. In hindsight, what could the government have done differently here? How can we be sure that in future we avoid incarcerating minors in adult facilities, something that we must do in order to, as you've set out, honour our responsibilities under the Convention on the Rights of the Child?
Well, Graham, I think it's important, and I hope the report will help agencies keep at the forefront of their mind that the benefit of the doubt must be given to someone who asserts that they're a child, unless, of course, they're manifestly an adult. If someone who plainly is 40 years of age says they're a child, then, of course, you can disregard that. But if someone who could be a child claims to be a child, they must be given the benefit of the doubt. I think it's also important that those engaged in our criminal justice system think carefully about the nature of the expert evidence they call, their level of confidence that it's appropriate to place before a court, and that as they become alert to potential problems, that they share that information both with the court and defence counsel, as is their obligation.
Well, Cathy, thanks for sharing with us in regard to this inquiry. It's a very large piece of work that that should shape a more humane approach in future to the treatment of young people who encounter our criminal justice system. Just before we finish, can you talk to us about your plans for life after the commission, after your busy time here? What is it, almost four years here?
That's right, Graham. Look, I'm happy to do that. I am, as you know, sad to leave the Commission. Mm. I've greatly enjoyed leading this, as I think, very effective and very important institution in Australia's democracy, but it is time for me to move on. I have family responsibilities, as you know, in Adelaide, and the Commission's main centre of activity is Sydney. Mm. So I will go back to Adelaide. I will spend more time with my husband. I have two ageing parents in their 90s. I'm very privileged at my age to have two parents who are alive, but they are needing more support, and I think I need to go there. And I also propose to give myself just a holiday, a break. As you suggest, I've been busy for a very long time, well before, indeed, before I came to the Commission, although this has been a busy time. And because I think I need a rest, I'm deferring until I have a rest any real decisions about where I go next.
Sure. And you've brought your family into your work, because one of your parents has contributed a story to our Age Positive Stories on our website, haven't they?
She certainly has. My mother's a bit of a computer whiz. She didn't take it up until she was in her late 80s. She's now in her 90s. She uses it to stay in contact with her children, her great-grandchildren, her friends. If she can do it, it really does illustrate to other mature age people that you can get onto this technology and that it can give you a wider life than you might otherwise have, especially as you become increasingly frail.
Mm. Well, thanks, Cathy. I've very much enjoyed working as a commissioner under your leadership, and I'm sure that our PodRights audience have found our discussions over that time informative and interesting. So thanks very much.
Thanks to you, Graham.
And thanks to all of you listening to PodRights. Remember that this podcast is for you. So if you have a suggestion of someone with whom I should talk or a comment on the podcast, please email me at podrights@humanrights.gov.au or find me and message me on Facebook or Twitter. Just search for Graeme Innes, GraeMeInnes. Also, if you want to engage more on human rights issues, have a look at tellmesomethingidontknow.gov.au, our Something in Common project, where you can read fascinating human rights facts and stories, participate in polls, add your own content, and find out what you can do to advance human rights issues in Australia. And keep your podcatchers ready for the next PodRights in the series, because human rights are for everyone, everywhere, every day. I'm Graeme Innes. Goodbye for now.